The Afterlife podcast employs dark humor and frank language. It is intended for a mature audience. The Afterlife Podcast. Serialized paranormal fiction written by me, Maximilian Defoe. Thank you for joining me for episode 9, Real Pain for My Sham Friends. Beverly Hills, California, 2026. A light-skinned black woman with a long chestnut-brown weave stomped into Karen's living room in a pair of gaudy open-toe stilettos and a loud summer pedicure. For every complexion, there's a color the person should never wear or even stand near. This was that shade of blue. If someone drank milk of magnesia and antifreeze, then puked, that color. Despite obvious efforts to exude glamour, Richard still managed to look cheap somehow. Mugging for a selfie, she posed for the camera, then kicked up her heel to brush some pretend dust off her Louboutins. Not knockoffs, genuine and bought new this season, but at a discount place like Lowman's or some outlet mall. Long after the look and excitement of the moment had died down, the trend itself swallowed up into the gray din of fashion's graveyard, to rot in its final resting place between a Versace perfume tear-out and a postcard for 12 issues of Vogue for the unbelievably low price of just $12 for next year. Before me, the sea is draining. In my face, the salty stain. Far more is gone than what remains. I'm just a window to the sea. She used to be my friend. Now I ignore her. How can she not despise me? I am the reaper. I reap what you sow. From cradle to grave, we rape who we owe. You already know. Karen and Richard used to be friends. Though, as far as Karen was concerned, they weren't anymore. This was partly because Richard had the social graces of a housefly. But on a deeper level, Karen knew that Richard was an undercover hater and dangerous to be around. Not because she openly wanted to harm Karen, but because Richard didn't have it in her to truly be happy for anyone she felt was doing better than herself. Richard reminded Karen of Frito Corleone in The Godfather. Capricious and troubled, a liability. A person's recklessness wasn't like a talisman they could wear that would put themselves alone in harm's way, yet allow safety for others. Recklessness was more like a fart, an airborne malfeasance, traveling in the wake of its agent, an invisible assailant. Envy betrays its host in subversive ways. It was nothing new. In one of Karen's favorite breakup books, The 48 Laws of Power, Karen had read about the Byzantine Empire and a young emperor named Michael III and his friend, Basil the Macedonian, who, even after Michael III hooked him up with a generous share of his own wealth and considerable power, still turned on his longtime friend come emperor, killing him and a member of his family. Shakespeare's Macbeth murdered his best friend Banquo, even though Macbeth had already been told he would himself be king. And Banquo hadn't been just any old friend. They'd been in the trenches together. Even after the prophecy that Banquo would be a lesser man to Macbeth, reason in and of itself for Banquo to feel bunched up, no place in the play is it suggested that Banquo was envious of Macbeth. Banquo didn't even play or hate on Macbeth for being a murderer, even though he must have suspected it. Macbeth, for all his circumstance, was just another ambitious but talentless thug trying to secure his position by cutting other people down. Banquo's mistake was sticking around too long. Macbeth was such a punk-ass motherfucker. But Banquo knew Macbeth was a traitor and showed up to his dinner party anyway. Why? Karen decided that she needed to read the Scottish play again. Maybe there was something in the way they met that could have tipped off Banquo to his friend Macbeth's pathology. There were almost always red flags. They just got overlooked most times. Shakespeare was always dropping game for people to pick up who really wanted to learn about human nature. Karen, at regular intervals, ruminated over the people she'd had in her own life with particular focus on character to see if she knew any Macbeths. She'd befriended a few in the past, but had gotten rid of most of them. People were always killing each other for power in Shakespeare. Sometimes it made sense, but not always, like the Banquo situation, which Karen felt was fucked up. Macbeth wasn't even sure to gain anything by killing his boy Banquo, but had done it anyway, out of jealousy. How pathetic. Sure, that was fiction, but there were more true stories of treachery that really happened, like that of Michael III, than all the stories any writers had ever written put together. It was art imitating life, not the other way around, for the most obvious reason. Karen and Richard's friendship had looked promising in the beginning, but once Karen caught a glimpse of Richard's character, she felt obliged to cut herself loose. She'd read countless histories of envious friends who later turned out to be the weak link through which an enemy gained access. Some of these friends had even used their chummy position to perpetrate the wrongdoings themselves, causing their used-to-be friend confusion, disappointment, and heartbreak. The tragic demise of any icon was almost always an inside job. Envious people in the person's own camp who were plotting, ready to relish in, and in some cases capitalize on, an imminent fall from grace, often suggesting, rewarding, or conspiring to cause an unnatural death without shame. Historically, envious people have always been a danger to themselves and to those around them. The method macro-haters used these days might appear on the surface to be more sophisticated than the stabbings and poisonings of Shakespeare's day, but it didn't seem to Karen that the essence of the struggle had changed. Early in their friendship, Karen had listened to hours of stories in which Richard depicted herself as the hooker with a heart of gold, but from what Karen had seen in the months that followed, Richard's heart of gold was more like a squished tomato with a moldy gash still wet from its rude costume of gold spray paint, or a human heart-shaped rock covered in honey. Not a real heart of gold in any case, because dealings with Richard usually meant recognizing and avoiding some type of con, ranging anywhere on the scale from petty to fraudulent. Richard wasn't above it, but from what Karen had seen, Richard generally steered clear of criminal activities for personal gain, preferring to limit unnecessary risks that could potentially land her in prison, again. Revealing more than she'd intended one afternoon, Richard mentioned to Karen in casual conversation that she'd come to accept that she didn't have any superior talents. She'd said she felt sad about it, but was ready to admit she wasn't a great actress, and that she didn't feel she was a person who had bright ideas. Richard said that she was good at fucking men and getting money, and that was it. Richard had been in a melancholy mood, but she'd sounded confident saying it. Karen hadn't argued. How could she? Anyway, Karen had thought at the time, everybody can't be a star. Richard accepting that, and in spite of it, making a commitment to create a dream lifestyle that included world-class resorts and private planes anyway, was nervy, which Karen could and did appreciate. Everybody loves a rags-to-riches story. But instead of moving into the direction of self-improvement for the sake of self-empowerment, Karen noticed that Richard rejected opportunities to learn new things. When Karen had asked, Richard mentioned a sport she enjoyed, but whenever Karen suggested a casual meetup to hit the ball around, Richard was never up for a match. In fact, Richard seemed to play tennis so infrequently that her purported interest in the sport almost seemed like a lie. As far as Karen had been able to see, Richard didn't have any passionate hobbies outside the gluttonous consumption of bootleg reality television programs, which Karen felt could have worked out in her favor. But instead of allowing herself to be inspired by the lifestyles led by her favorite reality TV stars to do as well for herself, Richard became obsessed with trying to wear the same clothes and acquire the same amount of attention as the rich women she idolized on the various shows she watched. Karen certainly had no inclination to judge anyone's lifestyle. As a lifetime artist herself, Karen didn't have any strong feelings about the value of holding a job. If anything, Karen had learned that hard work, as a construct, was bullshit. Hard work only got a person in a position to do more of the same. Plenty of people had found happiness, grew their wealth, and had even come into power by finding a way to make money doing what they loved, especially when it seemed like a long shot at the offset. If Richard wanted to be rich and famous for being a prostitute or some rich guy's mistress, it was surely possible. Getting paid to put up with some married guy and all his idiosyncrasies wasn't a path Karen would choose to walk along, but she didn't find it morally unsavory. It was Richard's style of interacting with the world that caused Karen to feel uneasy. A clear pattern of bait and deceive was emerging that Karen recognized as that of a pathological liar. And Karen had already learned from experience that a pathological liar is impossible to reach. It was best to cut her losses and try to walk away. Richard, thinking herself to be bereft of any creative talents, and so imagining herself to be at a disadvantage, seemed to have herself convinced that running game on people was the only way to get ahead. Even her casual conversation was riddled with untruths meant to dangle carrots and mislead. Believing every misdirection to be to her advantage, if not today, then sometime in the future, Richard made habitual practice of offering, even perhaps well-intentioned people, lies like individually wrapped dinner mints to either eat now or suck on later, whether they had asked for one or not. From increasing distances, Karen had observed Richard parade through life, gouging holes in the lives of others as she passed through, leaving the flotsam of frustrated patrons and promises unfulfilled in her wake. Karen found it unattractive. In her rise to fame, Karen had come to see how inner beauty could, regardless of circumstances, open doors that remained closed to people less possessing of it. Ironically, it was Richard's own willful lack of authenticity that marred her beauty, or rather, the beauty she could possess. In her attempt to cheat others, she robbed herself. Karen had at one time felt that Richard had the potential to achieve great things, but those expectations had been decimated by her observations of Richard's dubious methods and outright deceit. Karen found Richard's compulsion to obsess over people and what they had in comparison to herself counterintuitive and self-defeating, a waste of precious time. Envy and her cousin jealousy both deny relief. Richard had tried to dress the stories up with some ill-perceived, Karen thought, slight or other that had been perpetrated upon her to justify her position when she set into a rant, blaming the gifts of others for her own inability to achieve the successes she felt born to enjoy. But even then, Richard's sense of entitlement was only very thinly disguised. Natural inspiration to achieve, bred by observation of other people's glamorous lives, had devolved from healthy competitive motivation to this chip on her shoulder. I could have been a contender. Certainly, in Richard's mind, it was the truth. But to Karen, who saw beyond the veneers, that was 80% off the truth. A yellow sticker. Karen had only recently come to more deeply appreciate that there was more to living well than the price of a facial. There was respect, for instance. Not only self-respect, but respect for others, which, when one was more concerned with appearances than relationships, could not survive. Beyond the uniqueness of a particular person's love, there was nothing anyone could want that only one person could provide. For business or personal relationships to be sustainable, one had to, at least to some extent, be trustworthy, credible, and reliable. all qualities that through conversation Karen came to understand, Richard ignorantly believed could be broadcast loud and clear by the car she drives. Karen had seen ignorance educated away, but rarely arrogance. Arrogance is a hard drug to kick, and Richard was a junkie. She never could have been a contender. Richard had never even stepped a cloven hoof inside the ring. The closest Richard had ever been to the action was outside the stadium in the back alley, scalping expired tickets for mid-range seats. But to anyone who would listen, she would say she was a star, almost. In Karen's eyes, Richard was a maybe-could-have-been movie star look-alike whose name you can't remember from that movie you never wanted to see. An aging, sometimes prostitute, and little more, at best. Karen was no angel. She'd bent the truth about a million times when some variation of the truth would have caused more harm than good. And she'd never felt guilty, never tried to justify her lies. Lies were like dollars. Their harm or good depended upon how they were used and how they were received. When Karen lied or withheld the truth, there was usually something meaningful at stake. Another person's feelings, somebody's job, a person's self-esteem. Richard's lies were a different breed of mendacity. Riding shotgun for a day of lunch at the Ivy on Robertson, then shopping at dinner, Karen had heard Richard's story devolve from just having bought another Rolex watch to needing money for bills in the course of the same afternoon. How rich or how broke she was seemed to depend upon which of her marks she was chatting to. It wasn't clear to Karen how much of either of the stories were true, but Karen realized whatever Richard had allowed her to overhear was meant to be overheard, another misdirection to put out an idea of some way Richard wanted to be seen. "I'm an entrepreneur," Karen had heard Richard sell it to her adulterous executive Johns, "a businesswoman." But anything longer than a half-hour conversation was enough for an intelligent person to see what Karen had come to see. Richard was just a small-time mercenary dealing dime bags of unlikely dreams to decaying dinosaurs, desperate for a sniff of even the final breath of youth. She wasn't a boss or a businesswoman, a ride-or-die bitch or a queen. She was an opportunist, which Karen felt could be a huge advantage for someone who had the sense to put that foxiness to use for greater things. Karen had met not just a few, but a handful of ex-big-time drug dealers turned stockbrokers. Essentially, it was the same game. The skills they'd honed, slang and dope, gave them an edge they couldn't have manufactured any other way. The way Karen saw it, Richard could benefit from her life experiences in the same way. Richard had money, and her time was all her own. She just had to choose something she loved and legitimize herself as whatever it was she wanted most to be. But as time wore on, it became clear to Karen that Richard was only interested in appearances. She didn't invest in her own self-improvement beyond a fad and spent the largest quantity of her time appealing for dollars, whoring and begging for fancy things. In Karen's opinion, it was a poor use of good materials. But it was Richard's life, so Karen kept her ideas to herself about all the great things that Richard could be. Karen had decided to stop talking to Richard forever after an unpleasant social exchange. She didn't make any announcements about it. She just left Richard alone. Richard, for her part, seemed to want the same thing. Until the first day, Karen's name appeared in the Hollywood Reporter. From then on, Richard could neither stay away from Karen nor curtail her jealousy. Richard had always been the one with more money. Now that things had shifted, she was beastly to Karen on the pretense of being stressed out about some personal things. It was bullshit, of course. Richard had spent the weekend seething as she watched Karen glide around meeting people and receiving accolades. Karen had enjoyed herself, but could see that Richard's nose was out of joint. Richard had even raised her voice to Karen, pounding her fists on the steering wheel of her car in frustration as she'd driven them both to lunch, then hollering that she was too angry to speak. Later that same day, after acting aloof toward Karen throughout before-dinner cocktails, during which Richard made fun of what Karen had ordered to drink. Richard had arranged an impromptu dinner and invited Karen, but snubbed her once the party was seated at the table. It was the most pathetic expression of passive-aggressive behavior Karen had ever seen. At a table for four, Richard had made it a point to overtly ignore Karen during the entire dinner, addressing the other two dinner guests by name each time she spoke, a tacky attempt to make Karen feel excluded. It had been an ugly way to treat an old friend. It hadn't gone unnoticed by the other dinner guests, but as they were just there for a free meal, neither of them bothered to say anything. Even as Karen had sat chewing her steak, she'd known it would be the very last time she'd share a meal with her used-to-be best friend. Their Thelma and Louise ride-or-die days were over. Richard had transgressed. Things could never be the same. A mosquito with a boner hovered in the airspace above Richard's giant watermelon tits, hoping to stick it in. Just the tip, I swear. Karen hoped it would leave a welt. She wanted to watch it blister, turn red, and swell up with poison as Richard absent-mindedly scratched it. The randy mosquito, dead set on romance, arced and dipped into the shadows of Richard's wobbly cleavage. After a moment, the mosquito swerved back out, drunk on Richard's bovine blood, then stuttered, took a nosedive into her other tit, and remained there, motionless. Richard didn't notice. A one-trick pony left her magic wand at home. How can you be lost, girl? Click your heels three times. No, the magic word is not please. The magic word is now, bitch. Thank you. Same again. If you didn't like it the first time, why are you back for more? See, you do like it. Karen tossed back the last of the champagne in her goblet and poured herself another. Richard looked down her nose at Karen's lithe back. Give me some of what you're drinking. Karen turned to Richard with narrowed eyes. You wouldn't like it. Let me decide that, sneered Richard. Karen filled a second goblet with pale yellow bubble juice and handed it over. Richard sipped. Smacking her lips, she raised both eyebrows at the jettison of money bubbles. It's delicious. I know, sighed Karen, in an affectation of coolness. With two champagne goblets dangling from between the fingers of loose fists, Karen glided across the carpet toward the center of the room to arrange the goblets on a silver tray. Richard peeped the extra glasses. You expecting company? You know, Karen shrugged. Extra clips for extra shit. Now why'd you have to go and say that? Now you got me thinking about big. I always think in lyrics to rap songs. You know, I hear Tupac is still alive somewhere. I heard that too. He's not, though. Richard looked slightly deflated. Karen flipped her hair. I know. I wish that he was. And Karen stopped to wonder if he did too. In musica est super. Put down my guitar. Pinch me off. Snuff me out. This is me. Watch me. Pump my brakes. Pull my ripcord. As I drop the mic, loud up in your face. Just a shell of a queen, waving an old Gucci purse that's been kept clean in a shoebox, another Redline discount, returned to the store without its little Gucci storage bag. Dusty, irrelevant, hopeful, unlikely winner. A half-watched Tyler Perry movie. Defunct philosophies. What talent possessed is underrated. More money today than yesterday. Futures more depreciated. Scabby associates. Fraudulent friends. Instagram photos. Life unlived in. Sophistication. A joke that's never funny. Humiliation. for a bully. None can achieve what they despise. What do you want, Richard? I was in the neighborhood. Oh, of course. The noisy fucking rapper that moved in up the street. Him and all his friends with their garden parties. Wannabe groupies on endless parades up and down the block. All thick thighs, stilettos, and ass meat advertisements vying for attention in Instagram dresses, followed by entire squads of men wearing golf clothes and tennis shoes with tassels like handbags. I fuck with Saatchi. Yeah, I've seen him, snorted Karen. He's got to be the ugliest rapper alive. What's funny? Your face, this situation, that handbag, my life. Thank you for listening to Afterlife, based on Afterlife, written by me, Maximilian Defoe, available on Amazon. Join me next week for episode 10, The Floor Seat Hater. Next week on Afterlife, Richard gets offended. Karen accepts a bribe. This episode features music by Otis McDonald. This is Rich Man in the Sky. I would love some reviews in iTunes. If you like this podcast, even a little bit, go on iTunes and write me a review. And if you know someone who you think might enjoy this podcast, text them a link. I've also got a Patreon set up. If you'd like to support the podcast, I certainly would appreciate it. And you can always show your support by subscribing on iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play or your favorite podcast provider. I appreciate your support. Follow me on Twitter, MaxxiMillian. I would love to hear from you, truly. You can also find me on Pinterest, pinterest.com/Maximilian. I've got lots of Afterlife pin boards full of Afterlife visuals and videos and other things you might enjoy. Also visit my website at TaryNMaximilianDefoe.com. I know that's so long! Don't worry. There's a link to my website in the description of every episode. Thank you for listening.